This episode of Behind the Bots is brought to you by Fingertech Robotics, North America's top manufacturer of combat robotics parts. If you're interested in building your first combat robot, check out Fingertech's Viper Kit, which includes everything you need to build a fully functional, competitive Antweight. Fingertech also carries a complete line of wheels, hubs, motors, and other components if you want to build a bot from the ground up. Check them out online at www.fingertechrobotics.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Behind the Bots, the greatest battle bots podcast ever made by these four individuals. In particular, there are other great podcasts, I'm sure. We are celebrating our 1 year anniversary, this week, and we wanted to do a big giveaway so that some of our lucky fans could get a chance to earned some cool prizes, and there was a, of course, the biggest prize of all, spending a little bit of time with yours truly. Coming aboard our podcast and joining us for a chat, maybe a virtual lunch or something, we'll work out the details. It's really your schedule that we're going to be working with.
Yeah.
So, with that, does anybody else have any thoughts on our 1 year of Behind the Bots? I know we covered this a little bit in our last episode, but... you know, this is our opportunity right now, right before our big drawing.
I don't know. I feel like the real prize was the friends that we made along the way.
Oh, I was about to say, I'm so glad that I made friends with you guys before this whole COVID-19 quarantine thing. Cause like, it's so nice to just sit and chat with you guys once a week, you know, it's great.
Pretty great. We are pretty great. So what we're doing today, so we're going to tape record our entire show. So we're going to start it in just a little bit.
Onto tape. That's the way we do it.
Get the reels ready.
You're going to see how the sausage gets made, including all of the mistakes that we're inevitably going to make in the next 20 minutes.
What you're really going to see is how well Lindsay edits this thing.
All the coughing, all the ums.
Yeah.
The giant pauses.
and then we'll upload it. When should we upload it? Should we upload it tonight? Should we upload it Wednesday? When do you think we should do this?
It would be the first time in our full year of Behind the Bots that we were early.
We could upload it tonight. Yeah, I mean, the news will be fresher than
yeah, why not?
Yeah, and we did say we were going to announce the winner tonight, so we might as well just post it.
We already made the decision. We just didn't know it.
Yeah.
All right. Cool. Okay. We're gonna post this tonight. I guess Chris, you wanna kick us off?
Sure thing. So we had more than 40.
No. Chris, we're gonna start the whole show.
Oh, we're gonna do the whole show and then do it.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, from our living rooms, as we practice social distancing, this is Behind the Bots, the podcast that brings you the stories of the builders behind BattleBots. I'm Chris.
I'm Luke.
I'm Lindsay.
And I'm Kyle.
And today on our podcast, our interview with Sub-Zero Captain Logan Davis.
We'll wrap up the show with this week's installment of Robots Around the World. If you like our show, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, TuneIn, CastBox, Player FM, and Podbean. You can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Behind the Bots, or you can check out our website at www.behindthebots.com. And if you like what you hear, tell a friend. We always appreciate your support.
Yep. And before we have Luke kick off the news, it's, again, very exciting. We're going to draw a winner for our anniversary prize crate giveaway.
Woo!
Yeah, so like I said, we had more than 40 people who entered on Facebook, and we were originally going to enter the total number into random.org to choose the lucky winner. However, we are going to instead turn the tables and roll some die.
So much better.
Dungeons and Dragons. Let's see who's getting this crate.
Wait. We're doing three prizes.
Yeah.
What's the first prize, Chris?
The first prize is Luke comes out to your house.
No mask.
And stays for a week. And you know what? just make sure that you stock up on plenty of no lactate milk. Now, Luke, why don't you go ahead and introduce the crates, and then I'll roll off.
Okay. All right. Our first giveaway is going to be a hangout with us, either on a future episode of the show or private hangout over lunch. Really, whatever you want to do, it's going to be up to you. But we'll hang out over video. If you want to come on the show and be a guest co-host, that'd be really awesome. We'd love to have you. And if you feel socially awkward, like I would probably if I won this, yeah, maybe we can just do like a virtual lunch or something. So, Chris, are you ready to roll?
Yes. And so, again, this particular crate is a hangout with yours truly, retail, $99.99. Okay, are we ready?
Yep.
Ooh.
Math. Number
35. Yeah, the number 35, this is Anthony D'Ambrosio, who writes, "The Valkyrie interview was awesome." Anthony, I agree with you.
Yeah.
And Alex are national treasures. So Anthony, you will be hanging out with us virtually. That's pretty cool.
Woohoo! Welcome, Anthony. Welcome to our show or lunch, whichever.
Next up, we have a massive BattleBots prize crate with memorabilia and swag for more than 10 teams. These include swag and memorabilia from ByteForce, Hypershock, Duck, Valkyrie, Malice, Smee, Huge, Blacksmith, Extinguisher, and Nelly the Elliebot. This is super cool. The builders will be sending you little prize packs directly. So Chris, are you ready to roll?
Yep, and just make sure you got a space cleared off in your driveway because this is a big crate. Okay, here we go.
Eighteen.
All right, number 18, Robert Steele. Well, lucky Robert Steele. Awesome. He writes, "The Orlando coverage was my favorite. I got to watch a few matches, but my kids lost interest. Your coverage got me caught up."
Sweet. I was in the same boat as you, buddy. That's awesome.
All right. The thing I love about this that Robert's winning is that he has kids. So like they're going to be able to open up these packages together. Like that's so great. And hopefully
that's going to be awesome.
Spark your kids' fickle interest in combat robotics.
You're going to get really nice stickers stuck on all kinds of things you don't want them stuck on. It's going to be great.
My favorite thing about this particular prize is that every builder is sending it to you personally. So for probably like a month, you're going to get like little things in the mail to brighten your day.
And to the builders who contributed to this, thank you so much.
And finally, we're going to draw for our grand prize, a Viper Antweight Combat Robotics Kit from our sponsor and friends over at Fingertech Robotics. Curtis, thank you so much for your support, continued support of the show. You were one of our earliest listeners and one of our earliest supporters. And really, we couldn't do this without you. So Curtis, thank you so much. All right. Do you have your dice ready?
Oh, they're always ready.
Chris, let's roll for the grand prize.
Whew, this is a big one.
And let's hope it's not going to go to the UK again, all right?
I might have to use my inspiration die on this roll.
All right.
The number is, drum roll.
Oh.
24.
24. Oh, my God. What a great name. Brent Ron Kalamazoo. Brent writes, "I enjoyed the Munson interview from before this year went nuts, mostly because I was really looking forward to going and I scavenged hard for that insider info." Brent, congratulations. You are getting a Viper Antweight Combat Robotics Kit sent to you. Woo!
And the only thing I have to ask Brent now is, when's your Beetle Wake going to be ready?
Curtis is probably asking us the same thing.
We'll be reaching out to all of the winners directly over Facebook. So expect a private message from us very soon.
Congratulations.
Congrats, guys.
Time for this week's Combat Robotics News. I have 7 news items for you today. First up, this week's must-watch video, absolutely hands-down must-watch, comes from Team Witch Doctor, which continues to single-handedly kill it on social media every single week, coming out with something new and amazing. This time, they published a virtual 18-way fight video narrated by BattleBots commentator Chris Rose. Now, the 18 bots that appear in the video included Balespear, Captain Shredderator, Double Jeopardy, Extinguisher, Free Shipping, Kraken, Malice, Monsoon, Nelly, Ominous, Petunia, Scorpios, Slammo, Smee, Tantrum, War, Easy, Whiplash, and, of course, Witch Doctor. The video, of course, very funny on its own. Chris Rose is such a delight. He also manages to weave in some underhanded shade at some of the builders, which I thought was really funny. However, I want to focus on some of these short videos because we saw little glimpses of the 2020 designs of new bots that are coming. Like, we saw the first video of Smee, which was really cool. The one that I really want to talk about, though, is Ominous. So this is a new bot from Dutch builder Tim Bowens, who last competed on BattleBots in 2018 with his Drum Spinner Reality. Yep. Ominous is running what appears to be a similar internal drive drum spinner, but a radically different drive platform. So this thing is triangular and runs on 3 Mecanum wheels. So you're going to be able to, you know, see some Shatter-esque movement in this bot, plus this really beefy drum. I was really excited to see this bot. First time seeing actual drive video of it, and like kind of came out of nowhere. Kyle, I know that you saw this video. Thoughts on Ominous? Thoughts on the rest of it?
Video hilarious. Chris Rose was so charming. I loved a lot of the shady comments he threw everybody's ways. By the way, Juarez, who are you? that was phenomenal. But the Ominous video like blew my mind. I was not expecting to see that. Those of us that are BattleBot supporters have been like really excited about Ominous. It's such a strange idea, you know, like a Mecanum wheel vertical spinner is going to be really interesting. It looked awesome the way that it moved around. I think that it's going to be really cool to see its movement dynamics in the box. I don't know how hard it's going to hit. You know, there's so many questions to ask, but man, that was cool.
Yeah.
And then Smee, I was confused by Smee. Was that heavyweight Smee, or was that little 3-pound Smee, but filmed in such a way that it looked bigger? I couldn't really tell. But yeah, the video was great. Witch Doctor's killing it. This was, what are they calling that? The don't touch challenge or the don't rush challenge. That's it. That's the TikTok challenge that this is based off of. Why am I commenting on this? Lindsay, you should be telling us about TikTok challenges.
Yeah, I've had to lay off TikTok or else I don't get anything done. So
tell us the truth. When was the last time that you watched a TikTok video?
Earlier. They've also put a hard 3:30 a.m. bedtime limit, which has really cut back on the several other hours of TikTok that generally goes on until first light.
I will say, I mean, this is besides the point, but like at night when Chris would watch like how to build a deck video, like series on YouTube, that's when I would get in my TikTok watching. But now we're watching Survivor, and so I don't have time for anything else.
Aww.
The big question I have for Ominous is, you know, do you need to have really great pushing power if you have a drum spinner? And is it important? You know, like, I would love to ask Adam Wrigley from Shatter if this is true, but every time I look at a Mecanum wheel bot, I just feel like it doesn't have the same kind of traction and pushing power. And is it really like, is it best applied with a drum spinner? I feel like a drum spinner is very much like kind of a head-to-head smash them up like in your face kind of bot versus like a dancing around your opponent and picking your spot, right?
Yep.
That's why I'm so excited for this new season. There's so many like new like little variations on things that we've seen before, but enough to make it look like be different and new, and we don't know how it's going to react or how it will perform. So like little things like that, I'm just make me so excited, and I want the new season.
Speaking of which, after killing it on social media, the team is also launching a new digital magazine this week. The team writes, quote, "Learn about our fan-built animatronic skeleton bird by Ben Reichard, the composition of our new theme song by Adam Cole, and hear from our teammates on the feeling of standing behind the entrance tunnel, our recent PPE efforts, and much more. The issue will also include fan photos, printable activities, and behind-the-scenes photos." The team says they'll publish the new magazine on their website at www.teamwitchdoctor.com. On over to the UK, where combat robotics illustrator Caleb Kempson is working on a new digital comic book about Nelly the Ellibot and Scorpios. Caleb posted the first page of the comic online this week and plans to publish 5 or so pages total, depending on the ending that he chooses. Last year, Caleb teamed up with Witch Doctor Captain Andrea Glately to draw all of the illustrations in their new picture book, B is for BattleBots. We'll include a link to Caleb's Ko-fi page in this week's show notes. Monsoon Captain Tom Brewster this week auctioned off the weapons disc from his Beetleweight Drizzle. This beefy weapons disc saw action at 2019 BuggleBots and even traveled halfway across the world to 2019 BattleBots, where the team used it to press the start button before one of their matches. The disc ended up successfully selling for £111. Thoughts on Drizzle. Kyle, I know that you are a huge BuggleBots fan. Drizzle, super, super cool Beetleweight bot.
Drizzle is a super cool Beetleweight bot. I loved BuggleBots. I would have loved to have put a bid on this thing, but man, I knew it was going to go for over £100 and then shipping to the United States. I just didn't want to get myself into that. But it is cool, and I'm really happy for the person who won, and I cannot wait for BuggleBots to come back so we can see this beautiful, beautiful bot in action again. It's like a precursor to Deep Six in a lot of ways, right? The first Drizzle was total glass cannon, and then the 2019 Drizzle was able to self-write and was a bit more reliable. And, you know, we're all really looking forward to 2020 Deep Six, which is going to be able to self-write and be really reliable. So I can't wait to see 2020 Drizzle so we could see what's coming up for 2021 Deep Six.
Ooh.
In related news, Tom Brewster this week released a new line of Hardox weapon bars and discs through his combat robotics shop, DrizzleBots. The new weapons cost 15 to 18 pounds each and replace his previous designs, which were made out of stainless steel. On over to video from the team behind everyone's favorite ridiculously overpowered vertical bar spinner, Deep Six, who showed fans that the bot can indeed self-write this year. This time, the team turned Deep Six on its head and managed to self-write the bot perfectly. Cool video out of Dustin's garage. it's the video that everyone's been waiting to see. You know, when we were talking to Deep Six, Dustin told us multiple times up and down, yes, you know, we can absolutely self-write this year. And the thing that's really exciting about that is that this means Deep Six could be going all 3 minutes in the box. It's really going to be difficult to defeat Deep Six by just tipping on on its head this year. Mm. It's pretty awesome to see it actually on video.
Yeah, I mean, Deep Six, their first, you know, their first rule is their defense is their offense, right? So as long as they're always kind of squared up with their weapon, they're relatively safe, except from self-harm. I'd imagine that the self-writer would probably come in more handy when it's themselves that have potentially flipped their own bot. If another bot has done enough damage to Deep Six to really flip it on its head, I don't know if it's resilient enough to keep the fight going, but I'm really excited to see, you know, it actually managed to suplex itself back up onto its feet and kind of roll to victory. It'd be really, you know, just a huge push for their team to show that they can solve, you know, a really complex challenge with such a crazy top heavy bot, you know, you know, more power to them.
And finally, an update to a story we brought you last week. After Slammo, Captain Craig Danby posted a video of his new suplex bot beating a poor defenseless lawnmower with a steel chair. We can now report that the video did reasonably well on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, but has caught fire on TikTok, where it's been viewed more than 1.7 million times. Lindsay, how many times did you watch this on TikTok?
Now you can tell that I'm really out of the TikTok game because I did not see it on TikTok. But oh my gosh, what a great like avenue for builders to try and break into and hopefully maybe get like more BattleBots viewers, because that's where all, you know, the kids are, and the older cool kids, they're on TikTok. And oh my gosh, what was it, 1.7 you said?
Yeah. 1.7 million times.
Straight up viral.
That's so exciting to me. And man, what a match made in heaven.
Oh God, it's Slammo with the steel chair.
That video was pure gold. And oh man, I mean, it's made for TikTok. Now that you say it, it's like, wow, that makes total sense. I'm so happy that he did that.
And that's it for this week's news.
After the break, our interview with Sub-Zero Captain Logan Davis.
Logan, I love your pre-coronavirus profile picture.
That was out in Japan, having a good time.
Were you there for work with IBM or something else?
Oh no, just having a good time, just vacation. Back when, you know, you could go to places.
Right.
I was supposed to go to Japan last month for the second time, and like we bought our tickets six months ago, and like every week it was like, oh, should we cancel, and then finally we made the decision to cancel when like literally you can't fly out of the country anywhere. Like, you know, awful.
I hope you were able to get a refund on those tickets.
Yeah, full refund. Yeah, we're gonna go again, I guess, when it's safe. But yeah, Japan's awesome. Where did you go in the country?
God, all over the place. I've been three times.
Nice.
You know, Tokyo, Kyoto.
Did you go to Osaka?
I did go to Osaka, yeah.
Nice.
Really like the Houston of Japan. Kind of muggy. People are generally really nice. And the food is excellent.
Yeah, that's great.
This week on the podcast, we have a very special guest, Sub-Zero Captain Logan Davis. Logan is a longtime builder and competitor who began driving Sub-Zero in 2005 and later competed with the team for multiple seasons on BattleBots. In the off-season, Logan acquired Sub-Zero from retiring Captain Jerry Clarkin, fixed up the bot, and took it to Robot Ruckus, where it was a major hit, flipping one of its opponents so high it literally left tire marks on the arena ceiling. We're looking forward to getting into all these topics in the hour ahead, so welcome to the show, Logan.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, Logan, thanks so much for joining us. You know, it was such a blast getting to know you a bit down in Robot Ruckus. We had such a fantastic time down there. It was so cool to see, you know, Sub-Zero in the box, and you know, it's essentially its rebirth, and you know, it was a wonderful time, and I'm glad that we came full circle now and have you on the show.
Yeah, me too. That was such a great event.
So let's kick this off first by letting you know, all of our listeners know a little bit more about Logan Davis. Can you tell us more about yourself?
Well, sure thing. Yeah, I've been doing BattleBots for 20 years at this point. I started out when I was 13. I was able to trick my dad into joining me on this crazy adventure. I've met a lot of really cool people. The robot community has the coolest people. You know, had some great mentors, including Jerry from Sub-Zero. And, you know, it's been a blast. I look forward to what the future holds.
Do you have any advice for our listeners out there that are 13, how they can trick a parental unit into allowing them to get into the dangerous sport of combat robotics?
I'd say don't. No. Start small. 20 years ago, there weren't any small competitions. The smallest weight class was 60 pounds. But things have really advanced. There's small bot fighting events all over the country, all over the world. I'd start small. Start with a 1 pound or a 3 pound or a 150 gram robot. You know, really vet out your design and scale up from there. I think that's the best way to get into it.
Yeah, definitely. So you share a few things in common. You know, we look the same. We're both sporting beards now in the COVID era, and we both work at IBM. Can you tell us a little bit about your work at IBM?
Sure thing. Yeah, I'm a data center manager. I've got about 25 reports, and you know, we keep the internet running. So really proud of that. I'm really proud of my essential workers that are out there kicking butt right now.
Yeah, I that's definitely the case for us here in our New York office as well. You know, there's so many bells and whistles going on in the background that a lot of people don't realize is just keeping the entire banking industry and you know, airline industry and so many other industries afloat. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah, it's wild. It's been a really cool job. I've been very happy to work for IBM.
I couldn't agree more. Now you do live in Texas. That's where we probably differ the most. We're all here in New York, and you're down there in Texas. Tell us a little bit about life in Texas, and you know, is there a robotics community down there for you to kind of play around in?
It's hot. It's so hot here in Texas. It's like 100 degrees right now. No, Texas is great. It's a really great state to live in. There's, you know, a lot of opportunities. There's a lot of great jobs. There's a really cool culture here in Dallas. And yes, there is a robot fighting scene here. I'd say 15 years ago, we even had an arena that would handle up to middleweights. That was actually the first place I got to drive Sub-Zero. Jerry brought it all the way down for a middleweight event that we had down here. Now we have the Dallas Area Robotics Club. Actually, they changed their names to Texas Robot Combat. And we have, well, before COVID, we had like four events a year. 150 gram, 1 pound, and 3 pound. And that's some really fierce competition.
That's pretty cool. Is that, and would you say that the community is still growing?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Especially with BattleBots back on TV. You know, we fill up events very, very fast, have to turn people away at the door. So yeah, it was definitely growing. Yeah, and I really hope to see things get back to normal so we can go back to fighting.
I hear that. Are there any schools or anything that participate, or is it just kind of, you know, people who are hobbyists and stuff coming out of the woodwork?
Oh, you know, that's actually a really good question. In fact, last year, I think it was last year, we teamed up with a high school and actually had an event in a high school. Vex Robotics was involved somehow. So yeah, I mean, we get a lot of high school students, a couple of high school teams.
Now we would love to do something up here in the New York scene as well. We don't really have a whole lot going on. You know, everything seems to be in our neighbors, Massachusetts and Connecticut.
Well, it's only a short drive for you guys, though, right?
It's not too bad, but 15 minutes would be a lot better than 2 hours. Or to make it down to Harrisburg for robot conflict would be about 4 or 5 hours, I think.
You know, last time I saw you guys, Luke, I thought you guys said you were working on a beetle. How's that going?
We have ant weights from Fingertech Robotics. We've built them, we've driven them. We haven't destroyed them yet because we love them too much. Chris, I'm coming for you. All right, I'm bringing the robot over. I'm gonna destroy yours. You know,
my beetle weight is nearly done.
No, it's not. Stop.
It is nearly done in the sense that I've made about 5 trips to the local junk store to buy every single component and have them laid out and organized and have not begun assembling them whatsoever.
All right, Logan, let me tell you. So I'm part of Chris's family. So I'm Chris's brother-in-law. So I'm very familiar with, you know, the way the family does things. Chris's side of the family loves to buy things and plan things, but you know, actual execution. You probably have enough parts to build 3 or 4 beetles over there, Chris.
That's my goal. Everyone says when's your beetle going to be done, and I'm just going to debut a fleet of beetles.
Ooh, sweep the field.
No one's ever seen the beetle multibot with like 12 different bots making up 3 pounds.
No, that's what you do. You just enter, you know, half the field is your robots, and chances are you're gonna win.
We got the flipper version of the Viper kit. So you know, I can tell you we're all fans of flippers here, you know. We're all flipper builders, so that's pretty cool.
I love flippers. I love flippers because it's a driver's bot. You don't have this big gyroscopic force affecting the way it drives. You're able to have really good balance between the front and the rear tires. They drive really well, and that's really why I like flippers. That and that just big explosive shot where you throw someone over the arena wall, that helps too.
Not me. I'm a glass cannon man myself.
Oh, but flippers are glass cannons.
I want my bot to explode upon delivering a huge hit. That's all I want.
Oh.
So Logan, can you take us back in the time machine and tell us a little bit about this 13-year-old who had a passion for robots and started building for season 3 of BattleBots and eventually did seasons 3, 4, and 5. You said that you convinced your dad to help you get into the sport. I had to convince my dad at 13 to like not take me hunting, but somehow you're literally on the Comedy Central era of BattleBots. Can you tell us a little bit about how that started and what that experience was like?
Yeah, sure. So I grew up watching Robot Wars on public access with my dad and always wanted to do it. But it was in England. It was just too far away, too expensive, and I couldn't convince him. But when I found out that this was happening in California, I put my little mind to work. I did all the research I could. I read all the rules. I started making designs, and I brought this big notebook to my dad and put it on his table. And I said, "Dad, it's here. Can we do this?" And he really didn't have much of a choice. That sold him. That did it.
But there was
those
no,
were, oh, go ahead.
There was no holding of breath or stomping of feet.
No, not at all. And it came at just the right time because I was sick of playing football and wanted to do something else. So this got me out of that.
Now we're big guys, and I'm sure that that's a question that people probably ask, because I'll have a stranger stop me in the street and be like, "Ah, you must have played football." But you actually get to turn to those people and say, "No, I built killer robots in high school."
You know, that's a conversation that often comes up when people start talking about sports. You know, I really don't like watching sports on TV. I really like to be kind of more involved and engaged in things instead of just watching it on TV. But I will watch BattleBots.
So you decided at one point to just go big or go home, and you built a super heavyweight called Steel Rain. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, sure. So like I mentioned, 20 years ago, there weren't any small weight class robots. On the Comedy Central days, there were 60-pound, 120, 220, and 320-pound robots. And when we were getting into the field, when we were getting into this event, you know, we took a look at the field and all the weight classes and decided super heavyweight is the right weight class to be in because there's less competitors. They seemed, you know, way cooler, because what's cooler than a giant robot? And they were pretty easy to work on because they're big enough you can fit your meaty paws in there. So that's why we went for that. We started out by, oh my God, you should have seen all of the little 13-year-old drawings of overly complicated giant robots I came up with. But you know, when you're starting out, and you know, there's not a huge repository of information on how to build a robot, you kind of end up just building a box. And that's what we built. We built a four-wheel drive box made out of steel. And its weapons were these two pathetic little, like, 1.5-inch spikes sticking out. It had one fight. We drove it. Well, we actually shipped it out to California. And, you know, this is back when the events were, oh, my goodness, they were 14, 15 days long, and you know, you would end up with a single elimination tournament. So you'd have one fight, and then you'd get to go enjoy a vacation. And that's really kind of what ended up with us. We had one fight, we lost, but you know, we used that time wisely. We went around to pits and met some really, really cool people, and learned a lot more, and were able to bring something a lot more competitive the next year, which also had one fight and lost.
And diving into something that big that soon, like, where were you sourcing like components and figuring things out from? Did you try to, you know, disassemble something else or put together, you know, like some stuff from just a scrap heap? Like, you know, where was your starting point?
So the starting point for Steel Rain was a very special birthday present. My dad, for my 13th birthday, bought me a quadriplegic wheelchair, a used quadriplegic wheelchair. And we spent the whole night just stripping that thing down, nut and bolt, to find the useful components to build a robot. By the time we got it completely torn apart, the only thing we used were the drive motors. And they weren't particularly good, but they got the job done.
That's pretty cool. That's a great story.
Yeah, we actually, so 20 years ago, robot fighting was the Wild West. We made it all the way to the competition, and just a couple of days before the fight, I thought, hey, we should test this robot out, make sure it's still working after we shipped it, you know, from Texas to California. And so we go out into the parking lot, we find a pallet, and I start smashing this pallet with this 320-pound box, and we strip a gearbox.
Oh, no.
This weird, crazy Swedish gearbox, and somehow managed to get one, like, overnighted just before the competition.
From IKEA.
It was flat-packed. We had to build it ourselves.
It was all put together with wooden pegs.
Should we get into Sub-Zero, guys?
Yeah, definitely.
All right, cool.
Be happy to.
All right, so we'd like to get into Sub-Zero a little bit with you. Talk about the history of the bot. Talk about your history of with the bot. So I guess no conversation about Sub-Zero can start without a conversation about Jerry Clarkin, the original owner and captain of Sub-Zero. So can you tell us about where you met Jerry and how that relationship kind of developed?
Yeah. So I actually met Jerry the very first day we made it to BattleBots. We were standing in line, I think, for pictures with our robots, and he was ahead of us with a robot, another super heavyweight called Hammer Time, big yellow box with this massive pneumatic hammer on it. And he noticed our Dallas accent, if you can call it that, and started chatting with us. Turned out he had lived in Dallas for a number of years, and you know, we just kind of hit it off and hung out a lot in the pits. You know, this was back when BattleBots was in San Francisco, and we went to go see, you know, Alcatraz and you know, just check out the town and had a great time. And, you know, several years later, you know, my dad and a local team had put together an event here in Dallas that would handle up to middleweights. And we were able to convince Jerry to come out with his new 120-pound robot, Sub-Zero. And I was so lucky. He let me drive it. And I think I might have won that event, or maybe I had come in second. But that was the start of me driving Sub-Zero. You know, there's a thing that happens when you're a builder. You put tons of energy, money, pride into building this machine that you're going to send out to get destroyed. And it can be really difficult to do that. It can be really difficult to make the call to not tap out or to drive this thing right into a spinner. And, you know, Jerry felt that his robot would have a better chance if he started having other people drive for him. So he would kind of, you know, hire these young guns to come drive for him. And he's had a number of drivers over the years, but you know, I far and away had driven it the most. And I had actually won a BattleBots event with it once. There was a demo event for Sun Java one year. And it was, I want to say it was like 8 middleweights, just back-to-back-to-back fights all night in a small arena where they started the spinners out at the full power. That's how they started the match out. And managed to, you know, clinch an awesome win over Ice Wave. I'd beat one of Paul Ventimiglia's robots, and you know, I was hooked. I really want to get that feeling back again. So look out, man! I'm coming for the giant nut.
So, just for my own personal questions, I do have questions about what it's like driving a flipper. So I know that when you hear, you know, Hydra, those guys talk about it, and I've heard the Bronco guys talk about it. They talk about like adjusting the power of the flip, and they might do a full power flip or a half power flip. How do you have Sub-Zero set up as far as like flip? Is it just full bore every time? Are you able to kind of control the output? How does that work?
Well, so Sub-Zero has had a few different configurations for the mechanism. But it so far has been just full power every shot. We've never really had a way to adjust it. For a long time, it was just this, you know, massive ball valve, that we would pneumatically actuate, to dump as much CO2 and eventually nitrogen, into the rams at a time. But this year I'm looking to change that. You know, when I bought the robot from Jerry, it had an electric self-riding mechanism that
that took up a lot of weight. And I thought I could probably put that weight to better use, updating the pneumatics. For 2019, Jerry had switched from this ball valve, pneumatically actuated ball valve, to these really beefy solenoids. One solenoid for exhaust and one solenoid to fire the weapon. So this year I'm adding a second solenoid so that I can move a lot more air into the rams, and I can also turn off a solenoid to have just a lower powered flip.
Oh, that's really cool. So tell us a little bit, this is a great like kind of segue into this. Tell us who came up with the name Sub-Zero. We have a listener question from Robert Holmes who asks, what or who came up with the name Sub-Zero? It's such a cool name for such a badass flipper bot. Does it take inspiration for Mortal Kombat, or was it just a spur of the moment when you guys needed a name?
Oh my God. I would love to tell you that it was inspired by Mortal Kombat. as a longtime fan of the game, you know, I'd like to say it's based on the Chinese Ninja Warrior, but no, Jerry came up with the name a long time ago. Sub-Zero used CO2, and that stuff comes out of the tank at a sub-zero temperature. It's ice cold, and that's kind of how it got the name.
And that's, as I understand it, why that gas isn't allowed at BattleBots anymore, right? Like, they're afraid that it might freeze the Lexan?
No, actually. There's probably a number of reasons why it's not allowed anymore. You can asphyxiate on it, right. Whereas nitrogen is, you know, air is mostly nitrogen, so there's not really that risk with the nitrogen system. But another problem that happens all the time is when you're dumping CO2 out of a bottle, it will actually freeze in the bottle. So you'll pull your robot out of the arena after having dumped out the remainder of your CO2, and now you bring it back into the pits, but you don't know that there's a block of ice in there that melts and repressurizes the bottle, making the robot unsafe in the pits.
Well,
there's also some other shenanigans with it too. The way you fill your CO2 bottles, you really need to fill it by weight. And so it's more difficult to tell what the pressure is, because it's very much so temperature dependent. So if you have the CO2 running into a hot ram, that pressure can spike past what you think it does. So nitrogen's, a little safer to work with. It's what you're running in most in most paintball guns. In fact, Sub-Zero is just using, off the shelf, commercially available, paintball gun bottles and regulators.
So when Sub-Zero was brought to BattleBots during the first ABC season, the first reboot, what was it like? You were with the bot at that time. What was it like coming into BattleBots kind of in this new age with the new rules and everything? What was the difference between that and the original Comedy Central days?
You know, it really, to me, it wasn't that different. Sure, maybe you're missing a few of your friends because they've consolidated into a single weight class. But it wasn't until the next year, when it was no longer a single elimination tournament, that I thought things really changed. When they moved to the fight card format and you were there for, these four fights, your four fight card fights before entering a tournament, that meant a lot more rebuilds in the pits. And that was a really big change for me.
Interesting. Was that a welcome change, or it sounds like you have some kind of bad feelings about that?
No. I love driving the robot, and I love having all the opportunities I can to fight and compete. But it you ended up needing to rebuild quickly and get ready, and I think that's where Jerry and Sub-Zero and myself really shined out there. But it was exhausting. It was exhausting having to rebuild after, you know, after you fight an ice wave that completely shreds the robot in the pits. So it really changed the game, because it makes it to where you really want to come prepared with, you know, at least another robot. Having multiple robots means you're a lot less stressed in between those fights.
Yeah, because you can have one ready to go while you fix the one that just got shredded by Ice Wave. That makes sense.
That's right.
So there was a major redesign between 2018 and 2019. And we saw a lot of really cool improvements. Some would even argue cool improvements of the bot, even over like the Bronco design at that point. So can you tell us a little bit about the redesigns and what was put into the bot between 2018 and 2019?
You know, I really wasn't present for all of that. While Jerry was preparing for the 2019 event, I was actually preparing to go to China to help out with another team at King of Bots. But I would imagine a lot of that redesign probably would have come from his new driver, Alex Horn. And I really, really liked a lot of the decisions. The decision to go with the, you know, big 8-inch rubber tires, to move the pivot point for the arm back, the armor. I loved it. But I thought there was a little bit of room for improvement. So
there always is.
We made those changes, and I'm ready to test them out.
So 2019 season was rough to watch, mainly because of that first fight with Cobalt was just, I think the way we described it on this show after we were reviewing the episode was graphic. Right. It was a graphic fight. It was really hard to watch. My kids like had to look away from the TV. But obviously the bot had a turnaround towards the end of the season. Alex really got good at driving it. The P1 fight, especially, that we all got to see, and the basement tapes, was phenomenal. You really got to see what the bot was like designed to do in that fight. So one of the questions that we got the most from our listeners was, why did Jerry decide to sell Sub-Zero specifically for $5,000, which is what he had the bot listed at, and what made you decide to buy it?
Ooh, you know, I think Jerry was probably a little disheartened after that event. I also know he's got several other projects that he's been wanting to focus a lot of time on, including his really awesome T-Rex car. It's a little three-wheel bike engine powered hot rod. And, you know, when I went out to buy Sub-Zero, he took me for a ride, and that thing is so cool. So I'm awesome. Really looking forward to seeing, you know, what he does with that. I think he's getting ready to do another engine swap maybe. But yeah, I think that played into it. It's a really expensive hobby, and to do it year after year without going into serious debt, you really need to have a lot of really great sponsors that help kind of shoulder that cost. And, you know, I think that probably played a factor for him. Now, why did I buy it? I bought it because I'd been driving the thing for 15 years, and I could not see it going to anybody else. I thought, if anybody's going to have a chance with it, it's going to be me.
So I had to snap it up. I found out about it third hand and reached out to Jerry and said, "Hey, what's going on, man? I hear you're selling Sub-Zero." It's like, "Oh yeah, man, you get first dibs." So I cut him a check and flew out there and spent the weekend kind of going over everything and packing it up and shipping it out and going for test drives in his ridiculously cool T-Rex car.
Sounds like a great weekend in Pennsylvania.
It was.
So that brings us to our next question from BattleBots superfan Mary Catherine Carr, who always gives us really great questions on the show. She says, how much did Sub-Zero set you back? Just a ballpark is fine.
Well, it sounds like,
I like
you
that she qualifies
guys...
it with just a ballpark is fine.
I'll be sure to send her a detailed spreadsheet of all expenses. you saw Jerry had it posted for $5,000, and you know that's what I bought it for. But spent quite a bit of money updating it for the event back in November in Florida. Spent quite a bit shipping it. And I've since worked with the team to completely redesign it. There's almost nothing we're really reusing, maybe a couple of armor attachments. And yeah, it's expensive.
We already pretty much know the answer to that question, but Owen Carey wants to know, does this mean Jerry has retired from combat robotics, like completely?
You know, for the moment, I'd think so. But it's a really hard thing to shake. So I don't know that I'd count him out forever. You know, maybe it would be cool to, bring him out or maybe we'll see him come up with something else really creative and cool.
Absolutely.
We'll see. Only time will tell.
So our next couple of questions come from Mad Catter teammate Calvin Iba. He has a two-part question. Not many bots use tube-frame chassis anymore. Why does Sub-Zero use square tube versus all sheet metal construction?
Oh, man, that is the right question. That is such a good question. You know, when we built Steel Rain 18 years ago, version 2, 3, it used all tube frame and it was such a pain in the butt. It had 101 pieces of square tubing. Each piece has, you know, four sides you have to weld, and it takes a ton of time. If there was a good way to get rid of the tube frame, I'd really consider it. But the problem is when you're building a flipper, a pneumatic flipper, you have to build it big. You have to build it big because the gas takes up a lot of volume, and they're in these round vessels that are kind of awkward to build around. So it ends up making a bigger robot. So you have more space that you have to cover with armor. And the only way we could, you know, come in underweight was to build a tube frame. But it, you know, it has some advantages. You end up with a really light frame that you can bolt different kinds of armors on. Sub-Zero is actually really modular. We've got, you know, different front wedge armor attachments, different rear, you know, bumper plates and plows, different top and side armor. So we really mix and match until we can make weight and, you know, build a configuration that is armored in the specific areas where someone's going to hit, which sounds great until you fight huge. Yeah, we got huged.
So yeah, Calvin's second question was probably the most popular we got from multiple listeners. What changes have you personally made to the bot since last season? Now, I realize some of this might be confidential, but what can you tell us at this point?
Oh, sure. Well, personally, I've made a number of changes, but none of them are possible without my amazing team. Obviously, I've got my dad. I've got my teammate and cousin Chris, who was our head CAD guy and designer. And I'm not sure if you remember Brian Bray. He was out there in Florida with us competing with Mac and Cheese. He's also on the team. And they've all contributed a lot of really great ideas and a lot of great designs. Most notably is the drivetrain. You know, we've partnered up with SendCutSen, the laser cutting company. And we were able to, Chris was able to design a full set of geared drive pods. So we're going from, you know, these kind of light, dainty chain drive units with the chain kind of exposed to these hardened AR500 gears packed away on the inside of the robot. Like we talked about earlier, I'm adding that extra solenoid to get, you know, more power on the flips. But I've also almost doubled the amount of battery power. So chances are we're not going to catch fire in the arena from an issue with a connector or just, you know, sourcing too many amps. We've also added some more air volume. We've switched out to different paintball tanks, and we'll probably end up with a few extra shots. So there's just, like, everything has been touched. We've tried to make little improvements everywhere, and in doing so, we've built what's actually a completely different robot.
That looks the same, but everything inside of it sounds like it's completely different.
It's gonna look just like the old one, but the geometry on the frame on the inside's different. The armor's different. You know, I was able to reuse, you know, all of the motors and controllers and the RAMs, and maybe a front and rear armor plate. But that's about it. It's about it, everything that's similar between the two.
That's awesome. So I wanted to get into one other cool addition to Sub-Zero this year. So last year, the drone Spitfire joined Fuzzy's team and was running with Texas Twister. But this year, they've returned home to Sub-Zero. So can you tell us about that addition to your team and who's going to be driving Spitfire this season?
Yeah. So Spitfire is my dad's flybot, his little flame-throwing drone. And in 2016, when they first started allowing flybots, you know, my dad and our good friend Reg, who's now on Team Mutant Robots, came up with this very killer design for Spitfire. And there were actually two versions. There was Spitfire that shot fire, and there was another one that didn't, but it was more heavily armored, called Warbird. And that one was designed to take on other flamethrowing drones. It's a real shame we didn't have that chance.
Oh my gosh, that would be so awesome. I didn't know that was a thing.
I know. But now there's so few of them out there. I don't know if we'll ever get to see some drone-on-drone action.
I know. Will Bales really ruined that for everybody, didn't he?
He sure did. Sure did. So did the screws.
Yeah.
When the screws ate Spitfire, that was – don't tell my dad, but I thought that was hilarious.
It was pretty fun.
Spitfire's meaner than ever. It'll be spitting even more fire. He's managed to pull some more weight out of it, so it makes it easier to put into the arena when you don't have to decide between this armor plate or having a flame-throwing drone to antagonize the other team. So I'm really happy to have it back on the team. You know, while I was out in King of Bots, and you know, Jerry had Alex driving. You know, my dad still wanted to go to BattleBots and hang out with his friends and have a good time. So, you know, luckily he was able to link up with Fuzzy and Texas Twister, and you know, they're only 4 hours away. And so my dad was able to spend some time out there on Fuzzy's ranch working on Texas Twister and on the team, and you know, had a great time. They were actually able to get me into last year's BattleBots just kind of as a spectator for a couple of days, which was cool. I got to hang out with them and see some fights. So it really worked out.
I love that about Texas. You know, you guys are all right there in Texas, but you may as well be in a separate state. Fuzzy's 4 hours away.
Just a short 4 hour drive away.
Logan, you were telling us that you went to China to compete on King of Bots. Tell us more about that experience.
Oh my God, it was such a cool experience. So one day, I get a phone call from Donald Hudson, and he's like, "Hey, Jerome, designer of Red Devil, wants me to take his new robot, Dragon King, to China and compete. Do you want to be on the team?" Yeah, of course. Of course I want to be on that team. Well, that was the plan, but KOB, King of Bots, got delayed a couple of times. But in that, Jerome was able to make it to KOB, but he still needed some support because Dragon King is such a complicated robot that it takes 5 drivers. Tank treads, jaws, a body that lifts, 2 different saw arms. It had 5 drivers. It had Jerome, it had me, it had Ravi from Red Devil, and one of Jerome's friends and his dad. It was a crazy experience.
We love asking builders who've been to China to compete on King of Bots, and we've heard really different stories, like really different experiences. Like some people had really amazing experiences. Other people were like, the rules changed every single day. The pits were super sketchy. You know, like,
yes. It's all true. It is all true.
Electrified his table, you know, because they built a heavyweight for the first time, and shocked himself. Like, we've heard stories. Like, what did it look like from your perspective? You know, as someone who's competed for 2 decades, you know, in heavyweight combat.
It looked kind of like season 3 of BattleBots, where everyone's still kind of figuring things out. Don't get me wrong, they have some amazing competitors and incredible robots over there. But I personally put out 3 different fires. You know, saw some things that were a little concerning, but after a little bit of, you know, explanation and education, I think everybody ended up a lot safer. Oh man, what else? Ravi and I just would randomly take apart and rebuild heavyweights that were left on tables after they were done fighting. That was fun. Man, it was weird. It's a totally different show. It's a totally different event. You know, I wouldn't mind seeing some of their like interesting, you know, fight format changes showing up here at BattleBots. I think that would be really cool. Did you guys have a chance to watch the show? It can be hard to follow.
Yeah. Like, I actually really like the celebrity building a team kind of format. Like, team combat seems interesting because, you know, you want to build a balanced team. You can't just go all in on spinners or flippers or whatever. And plus, you kind of have that added advantage of it's like one team captain versus another team captain. Maybe it's like we could do it here where it's like, oh, it's the Midwest versus the Northeast, you know, like that kind of thing.
Sure.
It'd be kind of cool. But you know, I'll tell you the thing I really loved about watching King of Bots was just how creative some of these bots were. Like, I loved, like, Martian. The, like, kind of two-legged walker bot was really neat.
Like magnet, you know, magnet walker thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really cool to see like, here's a whole country that all watched BattleBots, decided like, hey, we're going to build some really cool stuff. Like, I'm going to build a clone of Tombstone and I'm going to build like a Martian. And I don't know, like, it was just creative. It felt like early seasons of BattleBots. Like, as you said, you know, yeah. Like people trying out new things and experimenting.
Oh. And it was great to see. You know, there were some really great robots out there. Snake, Black Rabbit, I think it was Blankabots from India had a really great robot. Orby. Oh, I'm so excited to see Orby come to BattleBots. Orby was, that's a gorgeous machine. Oh, but I loved the big team combat. It kind of reminded me of, you know, Pokemon, right? You've got six little monsters to choose from and you swap them out to kind of pit your best against their best. And you know, I listened to the podcast with that you guys did with Aaron, and he kind of left something out of his description of events when he was fighting robot after robot in that event. He actually knocked Dragon King's head off and immediately just started screaming at the top of his lungs, "I want the head! I want that head! Give me that head!" And he walked out of there with a with a signed Dragon King head.
That's amazing. But that's amazing.
That guy was hyped.
Jerome ended up selling Dragon King, right? Now we never found out who was the buyer. So now it's time for you to fess up. You've actually bought two BattleBots, haven't you? Uh-huh. Like you are the buyer, right?
Independently wealthy. No, that robot is too cool for me. That thing was beautiful. Jerome does some incredible work. And I got to tell you, he was an excellent team captain. I would go fight with Jerome again in a heartbeat.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so cool to see his designs. It's like moving art. Like when you look at Red Devil or you look at Dragon King, it's like you're like driving an art piece. Like it's pretty, pretty sweet. Yeah, I want to transition over to Robot Ruckus and hear more about your experience. That's where we met. So you've acquired the bot from Jerry. You've taken it back home. You've worked on it. And you're thinking about taking it to Orlando to compete in this heavyweight competition, really kind of show people what the new and improved Sub-Zero looks like. I was curious, before you left to go to Orlando, before you shipped the bot, what were your... what were your like hopes and dreams, I guess, you know, for Orlando? Like, what were you hoping to tell people, you know, about Sub-Zero?
I just didn't want it to catch on fire in the arena. That was the goal. So that Sub-Zero was still the 2019 Sub-Zero. The only changes that we really made to that one were some timing aspects on the flipper mechanism, updated batteries and updated wiring, again to prevent the robot from catching on fire. Oh, some tweaks to the speed controllers. But when I got out there, I realized this might be one of the most powerful weapons at this event.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't have any hard hitting spinners, and I got really excited. I loved that event. I want more giant robot sportsman events.
Yeah, it's cool because you don't leave with your bot in a trash bag. You know, like
no.
you can 5, 6, 7 fights over 2 days because you know you're seeing driving contest, you're seeing like a strategy contest, and it's not just an 85-pound drum just smashing into your face. Yeah, and Sub-Zero was so popular. Like the audience, a couple hundred people in the audience, all day long, both days. And every single time that you rolled Sub-Zero into the arena, people lost it. Like, they loved watching that bot. And your fight against Kraken, just huge, you know?
Oh, that made the event for me. I knew I had to get to that event. I had to get the robot ready. I had to take it to that event. And I had to show myself that I could do it, that I could be the team captain of a heavyweight robot. You know, I had to work out the kinks. I had to, you know, get a team together and, you know, get them battle tested before BattleBots. It was the perfect tune-up event for BattleBots. And it was a lot of fun. Oh my God.
So much fun. So tell us more about some of the more memorable fights that you had. I mean, for us, like I personally think that the Kraken Sub-Zero match was like the definitive match of that event. I'm assuming it's one of your favorites, you know. Tell us more about that match. Tell us more about others that you remember.
From Robot Ruckus specifically?
Yeah, or Robot Ruckus.
Oh. All right. I'll be selfish here. I took a 30-pound sportsman to that event as well. So I had Sub-Zero and I had my 30-pound robot Hard Reset. And Hard Reset is a hammer bot that uses the inertia of the hammer to actually flip other robots. And I had competed with it before out in Colorado. In a full contact, you know, mean spinner match, and it just got shredded before it could really do much. But in a sportsman match, it was pretty good. It was pretty good, and I had this fight against, I think it was called Marvin, the grocery store robot.
Is it Marvin or Marty? Was it Marty?
Marty, that's it. Marty, thank you. Yeah, yeah. And it worked. It did exactly what it was supposed to do. I drove over there. I flipped the robot over on its back and stuck the axe into the battery, and it caught on fire. That was a fun match. That was a fun match for me. But outside of that, there was this team that was made up of this really adorable family that drove a ton of flippers, pneumatic flippers, and they had some amazing fights. If you guys haven't, you know, seen that event, go back, check out Team Already Broke. They had some great robots and some great fights. You know, if you love flippers, that's a great set of matches to watch.
We got a listener question from a combat robot. We got a listener question from Kraken, who asks, "Why were you so mean to Kraken at Robot Ruckus? She just wanted a hug. Also, rematch?"
Rematch. I got excited. I don't know what to say. I don't know what to say there, but I would absolutely, I'm down for a rematch. I'm ready to fight. I think there was a point in the match where Kraken probably could have done some really, really bad damage. Unfortunately, I don't think the crusher was working like it should. But, you know, I'd love to have another match, and I think it would be a little bit more fair if Kraken were at 100%. So yeah, fingers crossed. I look forward to that.
Yeah. We got a bunch of listener questions, so I'm just going to run through all of them. So starting off with Nelly, the Ellibot tactician, Rara Granger, who has a three-part question. First part, is Sub-Zero really that cold?
Ice cold. Next question.
Yes. Second question. If I put Sub-Zero in my drink, will it be satisfyingly chill?
Frosty.
All right. This is a serious question. All right. So Rara, she also purchased two famous Robot Wars bots. So she and you are in similar kind of boats. So she asks, as someone else who's taken over another bot, how do you deal with the legacy on your shoulders and the reputation to fill?
You know, I think I'm fortunate in that regards to have, you know, a 15-year history with the robot. Yeah. I think it feels natural. But you know, all I could say is just do your best, test it and go get some fights and have fun.
Got a question from huge teammate Don Dorfler, who asks, will the Yeet decal return to the base of Sub-Zero this year?
We'll come up with some spicy memes and Easter eggs to throw in and on the robot. There's a Yeet decal on my remote next to the fire button.
Nice. We got a question from listener James Williams, who asks, now that the British flippers are finally making their way over to BattleBots, how do you feel they'll do against the US flippers?
Oh, that's a good question. I am really hopeful that we're going to get to see our British robots out here at BattleBots, especially our British flippers. I would love to have another flipper on flipper match. You know, I grew up watching Robot Wars on PBS. There were some really great Brit flippers out at KOB, but I don't think they're going to stand a chance. I don't think so. I think they're more optimized for, you know, an arena with pits, easy places to kind of bounce people out. You know, there's no pits here. There's no Sir Kill-A-Lot. There's nothing to save them. You know, I think there's some really big noticeable difference between the Brit and American flippers. I think having a wide four-wheel drive base is one of those things. And I think it actually makes the American flippers a lot more maneuverable.
Yeah, that's interesting. So, I mean, when you, like you, Hydra, like totally energized the category last year. Like Hydra did so, so well. And they've apparently, they're coming back this season 25-30% stronger than they did than they were last year. Like I really think 2020 is going to just be a huge, huge year for flippers, especially with all of the British flippers. I'm really, really stoked to see it. Really see Sub-Zero like really kind of have that same Robot Ruckus like level of performance at BattleBots. That'd be really, really awesome. Yeah. We have a question from a listener named Alex Valentine, who asks about Mortal Kombat. He says, we know that it can flip, but has Sub-Zero ever ripped out anyone's spine? And would you ever consider doing a tag team with Scorpios? I guess related to Scorpion, the character on Mortal Kombat.
Well, I'm going to show my power level a little bit here, but I don't think Sub-Zero would ever team up with Scorpion. They've got some real bad blood. since there was some there's a whole backstory there. I don't really want to get into it, but yeah, no chance. But I'd love to fight Scorpios.
Yeah,
I think that would be a fun match.
Oh, get over here!
no spine ripping. We've been we try to be as safe as we can, so. We'll keep it at that.
Thank you so much for talking with us today. We are so excited about seeing the new and improved Sub-Zero. Cannot wait to see you at BattleBots this year. And can't wait to see you in the BattleBox again soon.
Great. Yeah, I hope to see you guys out in an event soon. Get that beetle working, and when fights start happening, maybe come out to Dallas.
Oh, which one, Logan? Which one?
Two of them.
Oh, pick two. Thanks, Logan.
Thanks so much,
man.
All
right, thank you, guys.
After the break, we'll return with this week's installment of Robots Around the World.
All right, welcome back from the break. Time for Robots Around the World. This week, we're traveling to Singapore, where the country's National Parks Board rolled out a two-week test of Spot, the four-legged robot from Boston Dynamics. Spot patrolled a major city park in Singapore by remote control, reminding people to maintain social distancing. The Parks Board says it may roll out autonomous versions of Spot across Singapore's parks in the future. So if you just, take a second and kind of imagine this and think about what it looks like. You're in the park, you are having a nice little picnic, maybe with your significant other or with your children. You know, you're looking up at the flowers, at the sun, and then out of nowhere, this like four-legged headless robot dog comes like sprinting at you. I don't actually know. Does it yell at you? Does it have like a pre-recorded message?
It has a pre-recorded message. Yeah, yeah. It tells you that you need to spread apart.
That's terrifying. I mean, to me personally, but what do you think about Spot?
So obviously the first thing that comes to my mind, and anybody else who's been stuck at home watching Netflix these days, is the Black Mirror episode Metalhead, in which a person is chased down by this style of robot and eventually killed. Another thing that I came to mind when we were talking about this earlier for the segment is this would never work in America, because the first time that dog would come up and scare somebody or startle somebody, they'd shoot it.
Yeah. Yes. Things getting.
Here's my problem with Spot, okay? Like, okay, listen, I love Boston Dynamics. They're doing creepy stuff. Whatever. It's great.
They're doing Spot, creepy stuff.
The reason why Spot doesn't haunt your nightmares, like it does mine, is because they painted it yellow. And yellow's like the most friendly color you can think of. If you literally painted that bot any other color, it would be horrifying. Like, imagine like a black and white Spot.
Yeah, matte black.
Or just like metallic, no color, just like shiny metal.
Yeah. Ooh, blue. Yeah. Steel.
Yeah. Yeah.
They should just cover it in fur.
No, that's worse.
Yeah.
It has a head, and that scares me.
They have that arm thing that they can put on it in place of the head. Have you seen that? Like their little like arm that's that it worse. Can manipulate things?
I know.
It turns it into like a goose centaur.
Goose scent.
All right. I did learn two things when I was researching this story. So Spot is soon going to be available for private citizens to purchase just on the website. So, if you're very wealthy and you want to own a nightmare dog, it's going to be happening pretty soon. Two, some owners, because they sold probably a couple hundred spots or whatever so far. Some owners of the dog have since dressed them up in clothing and have them run around. And I'm happy to report they look absolutely ridiculous with clothes on.
This is all setting up a movie that I've pitched, I don't know, to maybe four people, but I think it has legs, much like Spot. This is, all right, here we go. This is the elevator pitch. Are you guys ready?
I'm ready.
I think so.
Boston Dynamics has inadvertently unleashed a rogue army of robotic armed machines that have descended down on a populace, causing all kinds of havoc. And they're connected by a neural network something, something, yada, yada, the cloud, and they've lost control of it. They can only send in one robot with a truly independent AI to stop them all. Short circuit 3, Johnny 5 is back. Input.
I love it. I got goosebumps.
Yeah, I can see it.
All right, if you guys just want to redirect yourselves to my GoFundMe page, I'm raising $90 million for my adaptation of Short Circuit 3.
That movie really shows us how advanced we thought we were in the late 80s and early 90s. Because, like, knowing what we know now, it's like, man, you couldn't get that thing to last on batteries that long. And, like, lasers just, you can't make them that powerful in that small of a compartment. What are you thinking? Forget the sentient robot part. Like, just the mechanics of it don't make any sense.
Don't limit our dreams, Kyle.
Well, that's about it for us today. We'll be back in your feed next Wednesday with another mystery guest. See you then, folks. Thank you for tuning in, and congratulations, winners.
Bye.
Bye.